Hello, this is the Radio Academy podcast. My name is Christian Hugill, and every week we take a look at a cool recent thing happening in the world of radio, podcasts and audio. Now, my first ever shift in the industry was in 2012 at BBC Radio Nottingham. I have loved local radio, well, long before then, actually, but also ever since, and know just how important it is to its millions of listeners across the country. So I was delighted to see BBC Local Radio all over the news last week, as eight of its presenters grilled the Prime Minister, Liz Truss, ahead of the Conservative Party conference. Now, ever since she and her Chancellor announced a so-called mini-budget several days before that had a huge economic impact, there'd been radio silence from the PM, pun very much intended. So all eyes of the national media were on this round of interviews, and of course, BBC Local Radio didn't disappoint. So we thought we'd get three of the presenters together for a chat about how to interview the Prime Minister. And with us, we have Sarah Julian of BBC Radio Nottingham, Graham Liver from BBC Radio Lancashire and John Akers of BBC Radio Stoke. I started by asking Sarah how the interviews came about.
It was a centralised booking system. So we do this quite a lot in local radio. So we have a group of people in London who work out what a big story is and they get a guest on it. And then they kind of offer it around. And there are obviously 40 local radio stations and not enough time for all of us to have a chat with the Prime Minister. So we all had to kind of make a little bid and say what times we wanted and why we wanted to talk to her, and then it kind of got divvied up really.
And John, what communication with number 10 Downing Street was there beforehand in terms of questions and that sort of thing?
Virtually none, I think. I got a note the day before saying you probably only have sort of 6 or 7 minutes, keep to your slot as you're going to affect other people, although we did go last. And then a message about only having a couple of questions, so just think them through. But apart from that, no, nothing whatsoever, really.
Graham, was that the same for you?
Yeah, we had no communication at all. Our politics reporter, the day before, knew that the bids were, that the Prime Minister was going to do this, you know, this annual offer to local radio before the conference. So we knew that at 11 o'clock that morning that there was going to be a bid for the Prime Minister. So we had ours ready to go. So my producer pressed that button at 1 second past 11 when those bids came up. And I don't know if it was first come, first served, but yeah, we were one of the lucky eight.
It sounds like you got in quickly. And Sarah, let's go back to you. What preparation went into it? How did you decide on the questions? Because you've got such a short space of time, that must have been a really important discussion to have.
That's right, yeah. I spoke to the political reporter in our area and also to our news editor. I guess we sort of felt like this is going to be the first chance for anybody to hear from the Prime Minister since the mini-budget. There'd been not really any explanation. So it was definitely, why have you done what you've done? What was the explanation for making those financial decisions? And how is it fair? And a little bit about our particular local area in terms of, we've got quite a lot of constituents who are in seats where it's been Labour for years and years and years. Like in Mansfield, for example, they've never had a Tory MP until 2019, ever since the constituency was founded. So these are places where they've had a big shift over the last few years, and they're kind of former mining areas and in need of levelling up. So how are they going to be feeling about the 45p tax rate? So an issue of fairness, an issue of why. And then I thought if I had time for it, I'd talk about a general election and whether the Prime Minister's got a mandate for making these sweeping changes. But as it turned out, I didn't have much time for that.
John, did you have to balance what Sarah talked about between it being the first time anyone's heard from the Prime Minister for several days? Because for those that don't remember, after the so-called mini budget, she sort of went AWOL, but also wanting to talk about local issues too, because that's obviously what BBC Local Radio is, you know, fundamentally there for.
Yeah, that was the difficult thing to balance. And when I finished the interview, I wasn't sure I'd got it right. And also, you couldn't hear all the other BBC Local Radio interviews, so you didn't know what had been covered already. We had a kind of an idea. I got a little bit of a brief, like 5 minutes before, from my producer, to say she keeps giving this answer on energy to everyone. She's got it scripted. Try and throw her off with the first question or whatever. But that balance was tricky. I'd read some of the things on Twitter about us all being like Alan Partridge and she was going to get an easy ride. And here we go then, you know. So I was like, right. Do you know what I mean? I was like, right, I'll try. I'm going to try and be brave and challenge when I can. And then I had obviously a couple of things locally that I wanted to get in. So I probably went about 60-40 national, local, maybe even 70-30. But I think it was important because we were the only ones in the BBC to be interviewing her that we did ask those big questions that everyone would want to know the answers to.
How was that balance for you, Graham?
Well, when we found out that we got the interview the night before, I worked on it with our politics reporter, Mike Stevens. I knew I wanted to talk about fracking. And if you want to, I can give you 30 seconds history of fracking in a bit. But I also wanted to talk about the cost of living stuff. I was going to kick off with the cost of living stuff. But Mike Stevens, our political reporter, said, no, if I were you, I'd start with fracking. I listened to him. And he was right. I thought that Rima, who kicked things off at Radio Leeds, would kick off with the what the hell is going on. And she did that in a really great way. I listened to what Rima did at 8 o'clock. And then obviously they bumped their news back. We were in the middle of our news. I had to start talking then out of the news at 8. I did look at social media and I was aware that every political journalist that morning was listening to BBC local radio. I'm told that the sounds stats that morning were absolutely crackers, but I'm really glad that our political reporter, Mike Stevens, said, no, kick off with fracking, and I'm very glad I did.
Sarah, were you aware of what the other stations were asking as well?
In a similar way, I mean, we've got an all-speech section, I guess the other guys have as well, from like 8 till 8.30, well, from 7 till 8.30. Mm. So it's not as if you get any chance to sit listening across to what other people were doing, although I was desperate to know. So in a similar way, yeah, my producer listened to what Rima did and to what the people before me did, and I got a little couple of lines from them. But I was aware that I didn't want to be thrown too much by the plan that I'd made, really. But I was aware via Twitter of some of the things that were coming out. I was definitely aware, as John said, that the Prime Minister was just reading a pre-prepared script and it was becoming a little tedious to keep hearing the same line regardless of what question she was asked. So I was kind of prepared for that. I thought it was brilliant what Graham did, by the way, about fracking. I thought it was really brave and it was really interesting as well, as somebody where we haven't really got much history with, you know, the fracking issue here in Nottinghamshire. Yet when I've spoken to people about the interview, a lot of them have said, it's really interesting to hear about fracking and local consent and how that's going to work out. What I would say is that was interesting in that Graham did go very local to his area, but it turned out to be really interesting for everybody nationally as well.
John, just before we move into the actual interviews themselves, I want to pick up on something you said a second ago, John, where you said that you saw some of the, you know, sort of sniffiness towards local radio, the sort of Alan Partridge comparisons. Did that annoy you? Because it would have annoyed me. Having worked in local radio myself, I've worked with Sarah, I know how amazing it is. And, you know, this is not to sound patronising, but there are phenomenal journalists across local radio. We know that. It definitely did happen that some people on Twitter put their point forward that that's not the case, which we know it is. Did that irritate you, John? Because I think it would have done me.
Yeah, it did. It did. It really did. Just posting something like that for clickbait, very, very easy and sloppy. And from someone who's obviously not in the know and doesn't see what a brilliant, brilliant thing BBC local radio is, not only as radio and entertainment and to challenge our local politicians and local councils and to get real stories across, but also what a brilliant hotbed of training for people who've gone on to be the best ever, you know, if you've all come through local radio and done their time in local radio. So it did annoy me, and I knew we'd do well. I didn't think maybe the impact of what we did would go so far and wide, and I just think it was such a good day for local radio. But I knew we'd do it. I knew we'd be all right.
Graham, did it irritate you, and did you expect the sort of praise for local radio to come seeping out afterwards, which it has done?
No. It was great. It was still, from a lot of the praise afterwards went, well, can you believe it? They can ask questions. It's but, it's, you know, they actually did a half-decent job. Well done them. Yeah, there was a bit of that.
Sarah, did you notice any of that at all?
Oh, Oh, 100%. Yeah. And I think, like Graham says, some of the accolades afterwards were laced with a little bit of surprise that we can actually do our jobs. But we literally do this all the time, don't we? We try to ask questions on behalf of our listeners to people who might have the answers, and we try and get the answers. And whether that is about a falling down shopping centre or the roadworks on the A612 in Nottingham, or whether it's the Prime Minister, we're quite used to doing it. And I think we're quite used to doing it in normal language. And maybe that is what made it so impactful, I think, is because quite often when you hear senior politicians interviewed on network stations, they use sort of fancy political language or economic language. And I think maybe hearing the disparity between us talking in quite plain terms, you know, when Graham says it causes earthquakes and John says, you know, it's put our mortgages up, in ordinary language, and the kind of juxtaposition between the Prime Minister's scripted responses, I think that was quite stark, and you don't normally hear it quite like that.
Hi, Sam Bailey here, Managing Director of the Radio Academy, and I wanted to give you a final warning that applications for the Radio Academy mentoring programme, supported by Broadcast Bionics, close this Monday lunchtime, so it's your last chance to get on this year's scheme. Mentoring can seriously boost your career, and RAMP will give you 6 sessions with an industry leader from another part of the sector, as well as a support structure with all your fellow mentees on the scheme. But don't take my word for it. Here's Sal, who was part of RAMP 2022.
My name is Sal Ahmad. I'm a senior producer at TalkSport, and my mentor was a senior leader in radio news who's been at the BBC and in commercial broadcasting. The mentoring experience was invaluable. It was a chance to reflect, to be asked difficult questions in order to be pushed, in order for me to grow. The onus was on me to set a timetable and to come to our sessions with how I would approach my many challenges. The mentor would give me questions to bounce off, and being challenged was quite crucial in being able to find my own solutions. It's not just about the one-on-one with the mentor, it's also about the two-way communication with the cohort. I learnt so much about what goes on elsewhere across radio and audio. Being part of the cohort was a chance to share experiences, share ideas, share tips. We've still got our WhatsApp group growing, we're still in touch. People who have issues, people who have concerns, happy to share them on the group, and we'll offer our support, we'll offer ideas, and every so often we'll organise a Zoom session where we can all get together and talk through challenges that we all face. It's an opportunity to grow your network. It's a chance to learn from other experienced radio professionals. It's a chance to be part of a supportive environment. I would say grab it with both hands.
Grow your network, learn from other professionals, and be part of a supportive environment. Sounds pretty good, right? So don't miss out. Applications are open until lunchtime on this Monday, the 10th of October, and all the details are on our website at radioacademy.org.
John, I just want to pick up on one particular point of your interview. There was a line about mortgages that you threw straight back at the Prime Minister and said, listen, our mortgages are going up.
It's also about how we grow the size of the pie so that everyone can benefit.
By borrowing more and putting our mortgages up.
We need to borrow more this winter for the energy crisis that we're facing. And I think that was the right thing to do.
We're going to spend more in mortgage fees under what you've done based on the predictions than we would have saved with energy.
I don't think anybody is arguing that we shouldn't have acted on energy.
Were you surprised at how much that threw the Prime Minister? Because that was a real moment of silence that was picked up a lot nationally.
I genuinely thought the line had gone down. And there wasn't a delay operating on our lines. Very, very minimal. I think it was almost 4 seconds before she answered it. I had to look, and I looked at my producer and said, she's still there. I wish I'd said, hello, Prime Minister. And there's loads of things like that where you go back and you kind of think, oh, I should have done that. I should have done this. And when I said mortgages as well, I thought, and mortgages obviously means rents as well. 35% of people have a mortgage and it means rents as well. So there are little things like that. You look back and go, well, I should have phrased it slightly differently. But you are live on the radio interviewing the Prime Minister, I suppose. And when you look back on it, those silences did make headlines, and she was thrown. I don't think maybe she was looking for a script which she could adapt to answer that question.
She was thrown, and Graham, there was a similar moment, we've already discussed it in yours, with fracking.
Your local MPs don't want it. All Conservative. In the past, the County Council have said they didn't want it, yet your government overturned it. The science hasn't changed. Why can't you tell us this morning there won't be a return to fracking in Lancashire?
Well, I don't accept the premise of your question.
Why?
It's certainly the case at present. Well, because what I've said is if there is local consent, we will go ahead.
Did you expect that would throw her as much as that fracking question did?
I don't know if she would have thought that we'd have gone straight off with fracking. I don't know. But the big question is, the government say, yeah, we want to look at it again, but with local consent. And she couldn't... You make your own mind up whether she gave an answer which was clear what local consent means. The one thing I'm really proud of, and it just came out, is then I asked her a question and she went, I don't accept the premise of your question. And straight away I went, why? And that kind of threw her a bit. It just came out. Whereas I'm told, you know, big political beasts say that a lot to disarm the person talking to them. And I just said, well, why? And she kind of struggled with that.
Sarah, there was a very similar moment in yours, in fact, because you mentioned the reverse Robin Hood line in terms of the 45% tax rate.
But the choices you've made in this mini budget is going to benefit far greater those who are very, very well off. If you make a million, you're going to benefit 55 grand a year from the tax cuts. On 20k, like a teaching assistant or a nurse, £157. A couple of people have said to me here in Nottingham, this is like a reverse Robin Hood.
That simply isn't true.
Which bit of it?
By far the biggest part of the mini... Well...
That the tax cuts are disproportionately benefiting the wealthiest.
The biggest part of the package that we announced is the support on energy bills.
And you went, well, which bit is not true? And again, there just wasn't an answer there. Again, did you expect that?
No, I expected to be able to explain. I think if you say to someone that they're not telling the truth, I would expect someone to be able to explain which bit of it was a lie. So I genuinely wanted to know. Maybe I'd got it wrong and that would be fine, of course, you know. And if I had said something that wasn't true, what I'd said was that the very rich are disproportionately going to benefit from the tax cuts. And she said that that wasn't true. So, I mean, I did say the reverse Robin Hood bit. But no, she didn't give me an answer to which part of my premise or question was untrue. I didn't get an answer. She just went on to talk about the energy again, which was, it was an incredibly frustrating interview, actually, not to really get any explanation or any direct answers.
It's a really good point that Sarah and Graham make, that we do kind of speak in sometimes in a more straightforward language that people can understand, or maybe the voice of our listeners or whatever. And we do genuinely go, why? Why though? Because maybe we're not in it. Do you know what I mean? We're not in that world every day asking politicians questions every day, and certainly not prime ministers, that maybe you just, and you don't have that pressure that you're gonna have to work with them again the next week as well, that you can just ask why and play dumb a little bit maybe, and challenge a bit more and a bit more freely in normal language.
Graham, do you think that has an impact?
Yeah, it does. And yeah, you know, and John's right, you know, the way that we talk to power is probably different than what, you know, national or political journalists do. We're on the side of our listener. You know, that interview that I did the other day is probably the most listened to one I've ever done. But that was just 7 minutes of my breakfast show. I've got to say, the rest of the morning, it was a really good show that morning, as well as the Prime Minister. And I don't know, I'm really passionate about this, that being local, saying you're local, is not enough nowadays. You've got to, for me, create a mood, a feeling. You know, we've got great broadcasters across the local radio network. Make them feel part of something. Make them feel like you're on their side. Not taking sides, always being impartial and holding up to the BBC values of fairness and stuff like that. But as well as all the other stuff, making sure you're fun, you're great company, you're tackling difficult issues, you have a moan, you do daft stuff, you celebrate people who make a difference, you share a lot, I share far too much of my life. And if the Prime Minister comes on your show, you're going to ask them what matters to the people in Lancashire, not what lobby journalists in Westminster are talking about.
I think Graham's right there. And just going back to this sort of snobbishness thing, you know, I got people messaging me saying, oh, are you going to ask her what's her favourite biscuit? which, you know, is rude and condescending. But actually, that is sometimes part of what we do. And it's sometimes part of the skill of what we do. I got a lovely message from this guy called Simon, who said, you know, what happened on local radio was incisive, passionate political journalism and a masterclass in how to speak for a city and a community that they love, they do us proud. But then he goes on to say, they kept us going through the pandemic when we were scared, when we were confused, when our spirits were low. They keep a smile on our face. Mm-hmm. They can also talk about cocks on sticks, which is a Nottingham tradition at our local fair, and updates on the dead crap roadworks at Burton Joyce. Try that, the political journalists. Do you know what I mean? I think we have to balance all of those things. And that's what we do. And that is actually a skill. So if I had have asked her what her favourite biscuit was, I don't think it would have been too much of a thing either.
I do love that. And I do wonder what her favourite biscuit is. Would she be a custard creams kind of woman? Or does she like a jammy dodger? It's ginger nuts. It could be ginger nuts, couldn't it? Yeah. I was joking all morning that I was going to ask her what her favourite colour was. Favourite service station. Has she ever licked the end of a battery and felt that tingliness? Has she ever been tempted? I was joking about that all morning and people were sending in joke questions. And that kind of sums up what we do, really. My main focus is to try and make people laugh, really. And all the news and all the stuff that you get around it is there as well.
What have you taken away from this whole experience? Because it must have been quite the week.
That I shouldn't have maybe lost so much sleep the night before and, you know, have that faith in yourself. And what have I taken away from it? The reaction on social media was lovely. Really, really nice. Overwhelmingly positive. It did a great thing for BBC Local Radio and just proves how important we are and how important it is to our communities. And that was really, really nice. And that that we can do it and we do our thing day in, day out. And that, you know, we're something that the whole country should be proud of, BBC Local Radio. That was it, really.
Graham?
What did I find out? That there are a lot of nutcases on Twitter. they tell you what. Oh, dear, oh, dear. So when, you know, really high-profile people include you in a tweet saying, oh, well done there, well done this, the vast majority of reaction on social media was good. It was like John, just, you know, we've all been doing it quite a long time. And we all did well, as I knew we would, but it's just a small part of what we do as a network, and I'm really proud of everyone for what they did.
Sarah,
likewise, it made me very proud to work for local radio. It was an affirmation of what we do every day, really, and just I think reminded me of the reasons that we do it, and it's not to showboat or to get attention on ourselves or as an ego boost, but it's to get answers to things that really matter to the people who are listening to us. It don't really matter whether that's from the Prime Minister or the man who runs the buses.
And to check your Twitter pictures before you do a big interview, because the one they've used of me in the Times is utterly ridiculous and doesn't fit the story. It's a selfie of me at 5:45 a.m. just before doing my show, when we had something funny coming up. I'm pulling the most ridiculous face, so that's had a good sweep. So that's something I've learned.
My BBC Sounds photo, we've had new ones done. I don't know why they've been updated. Is my producer, Leanne, is on my back. And everyone, everyone's kind of gone, why is Graham carrying a woman? I think so. I think Sheila Fogarty on LBC actually retweeted it and actually mentioned a good interview, whatever. I'm not going to ask why you're carrying a woman round.
I did think that, Graham. Brilliant.
I had a similar thing where my kids had been talking, someone of my teenagers that had the kids at school telling them about the interview. So they've been Googling my name, trying to find the interview. And the first thing that came up was me doing the isolation Olympics when we all had COVID and it was the Olympics. And I'm in my back garden on the grass trying to paddle a canoe.
That sums up Local Rec, what we do, doesn't it?
I feel like I can only end this interview in one way now after the discussion we've had. John, what's your favourite biscuit?
Oh, how long have we got left on the pod? Oh, that is tricky.
Gonna have to push you, John, I'm afraid. Our listeners want to know.
I am still here.
John, is the line gone
down? I'll go for, and it's not always this, but I bought a pack yesterday from the local shop. I'll go for a Garibaldi today.
It's a strong choice. Graham?
I agree. I was going to say Garibaldi all the time.
Get in, Graham.
And Sarah?
One of those like buttery, crinkle, crunchy ones with cream in the middle, like a sandwich.
Oh, or maybe a bourbon. That sounds like a fox's.
Yeah, it does sound like a fox's.
Yeah.
Never say I don't ask the tough questions on this pod. Oh, and custard creams, guys, thanks for asking. In all seriousness, I very much appreciate Sarah, John and Graham's time. Next week, we are looking at how One Extra celebrated 20 years on air by talking to one of its presenters about the massive impact the station has had on his life. We'll be joined by Mr. Rhys Parkinson. If you want the story behind a recent audio project straight into your feed every Wednesday, then please do subscribe to us. And if you want more from the Radio Academy, you can sign up to be a member for a terribly reasonable £3 a month. You get access to more than 100 videos of recent events and loads more. Search Radio Academy membership for all the information you will need. I'll be back with Rhys next week. I look forward to talking to you then. Bye for now.